Moncrief on News Talk.
Time for Moncrief's Murder Club. Today, Cassie Delaney is guiding us through some interesting, notorious Irish con cases, I suppose you'd call them. It's funny we say con artist and everybody else is a criminal.
There's some artistry in this. But my fascination with con artists is trying to understand the motive. And in a couple of these cases, it's obvious.
Yeah.
But in some of them, it's just not. No. It's like, what is the benefit of this to the con? The first one you'll remember was the girl outside the GPO in October 2013. So this was a huge story at the time. A young woman is found wandering up and down outside the GPO on O'Connell Street, most famous building in the country, arguably. She looks lost, distressed, and she's crucially got a very, very young look. She appears unable to speak English, and she seems to anyone who spots her to be just a frightened child. So the Gardaí take her in. She tries to communicate that she's 14 years old, and slowly through drawings and gestures, this horrifying picture emerges that she might be a victim of sex trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like she's been abused, and she somehow escaped and ended up here, mute and terrified on the Dublin streets. So there's a huge outpouring of care for this young girl, and the Irish state responds really well. They call it Operation Shepherd, and they set up a dedicated incident room with a 24-hour phone line. They assign her a guardian. They run door-to-door inquiries. They set up checkpoints around the GPO, stopping cars and pedestrians. They comb through CCTV footage. And over 2,000 man-hours and over 115 separate lines of inquiry are pursued. It was a huge, massive...
Yeah, no, I think probably most people listening will remember it.
Yes,
it was astounding.
They released the footage, which was really... I suppose questionable at the time, because it was like, if this is a vulnerable child, is that the right thing to do? But I think they hit roadblocks and they just couldn't identify her. And thankfully they did release the footage, because she was identified, but not in the way that you would have anticipated. So on the 5th of November, the same day the photograph was released, the girl was identified as a young Australian woman. Her name is Samantha Azzopardi, and she was born in New South Wales on the 21st of August, 1988. Hmm. She was not 14 as suspected. She was 25 years of age. She was not a victim. She was a serial con artist. I think this is the thing that we didn't realise at the time, and maybe people haven't realised since. This is only one of her little cons. She has had a mad, mad life out there. One of my favourites that she has done is convinced people that she was a kidnapped heiress. She said she took this girl who's off on a J1 hostage with her for a couple of weeks. It's a crazy story that the New Yorker covered. Absolutely mental. But amongst her string of convictions for fraud, she had over 40 different aliases. She first come to the attention of the police in 2007 when she claimed to be Dakota Johnson, the actress. And this is another kind of thread in her history as well. When she was growing up in school, she would often take on the names of very famous people and just with utter confidence express that to be her own identity.
And did she look like Dakota Johnson?
Not in the slightest. No, okay. She has changed her appearance a couple of times, but she's a very normal looking girl. She has posed as a student trying to enroll in a high school. Again, a very common con that certain people try to do. There's a fantastic film called The Imposter where a man does this as well and tries to get back. And why you'd want to go back to secondary school is beyond me, but a couple of con artists have tried to do it. So she hadn't come to Ireland for a scam. She'd actually come to visit her mother's ex-boyfriend in Clonmel, and it was him that contacted the police to identify her. In total, though, this investigation cost us over €250,000. And this is it kind of gets tricky here, because it was the state didn't really know what to do when the truth came out. The Gardaí were like, should we pursue a criminal investigation for wasting police time? Or is this a woman who is mentally unwell and this is a welfare issue? Now, given what she has gone on to do afterwards, I think that she is a con artist who probably evaded prosecution when she could have there. The thing about her is that she never expressed that she was a trafficked child, so she didn't technically make
she
any...
She let them infer it.
That's it. And this is what she does repeatedly. She was deported, but as I mentioned, in 2014, she rocks up in Canada with another con, claiming to be, a trafficked victim who escaped abuse. She has turned up all over the world. She said that she was a kidnapped Swedish royal. She says that she's a Russian gymnast whose family have been murdered. She's believed to have done this kind of 75 times across all over the world, particularly Australia, Ireland and Canada. But in 2021, she was sentenced to 2 years in prison, this time posing as a schoolgirl and an au pair. And she effectively kidnapped a child in this one. So up to okay. this point, it's a bit of folly. Like it's a bit of silliness, but she does bring people in at certain points and put them in danger. She has been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder and post-traumatic stress disorder. But I imagine that comes from the stress of trying to run these cons.
The energy.
And one thing that we've never really understood about Samantha as a party is where her money comes to fly across the world. She'll pop up in Clonmel, she'll be in Cork, she'll be in Canada, she'll be back in LA, she'll be in Australia. It's like, well, she must have a lot of flyer miles.
Well, and yes, and did she make any money from any of these scams?
She has worked during a lot of these scams as an au pair. Before she turned up outside the GPO, she was actually working as a carer down in, I believe, in Clonmel for a couple of weeks. So she does earn money, but not through fraudulent means. She kind of goes in, well, I suppose it's fraudulent to position yourself as a care assistant or a qualified au pair if you're going to kidnap kids, but that seems to be the only income that we know that it's been tracked. So she must have money from somewhere, or maybe running cons that we don't know about that finance the other ones. But a lot of this seems to be a draw for massive attention, posing as a victim a lot of the time, posing as someone who needs sympathy and who's warranting of care. But I've never really grasped what her end game is, yeah, other than notoriety.
Because it seems almost like a compulsion in her to keep doing this.
That's it. So she has been diagnosed with a fantastica, which is like a clinical term for compulsive pathological lying. But there's plenty of people who suffer from like borderline personality disorder who aren't conning.
Yeah, no, that it wouldn't be that.
Yeah.
Now, and she got 2 years in 2021. Mm-hmm. So does anyone know where she is now?
Oh, she was out. She was in Australia, but she goes right back to the conning when she's at it. She's been caught multiple times. The au pair one was a big one that she was running for a while in different places. So she's not even changing it up that much. The thing about her now is, and thanks a lot to the Gardaí investigation, is that she has been very recognisable. When she did the con in Canada, it was someone who recognised her from the photo outside the GPO that kind of rused her.
Ah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Right. The second one... This is a doozy. It's in a way you can kind of feel, yeah, Americans. But anyway, this is, I suppose we'll start with this chap, Jonathan Walton. Who is he?
This is one of these stories that proves that Americans have no idea what goes on in Ireland. Yeah. They just believe whatever they're told about it. So we're in LA in 2013 and there's a TV producer named Jonathan Walton. He moves into an apartment and gets to know his neighbour, who says her name is Mara Smith. She's charming, glamorous, generous, typical LA fodder. And she starts treating Walton and his husband to expensive dinners. She tells him that she has money, old money, this kind of family money that she left behind when she left Ireland. Now, here's clue number one, right? There's nobody with like big old family heiress money in Ireland.
Yeah.
She explains that she's an heiress, and she points to a framed document on her wall, which she says is the Irish Constitution, and that the signature at the bottom belonged to a great uncle. Getting away with all sorts over here. She's actually not Irish at all, but she does have a very strong Irish connection. She's a native of Bangor in Maine. There's no inheritance. There's no, you know, royalty in Ireland. There's no big Irish family. She just simply invented this up herself. And at different points in time, she told people mad stories, like she was on the run from the IRA, that that she was really well connected, that she was really well known. None of this was true. It was all a complete fabrication, as was the Constitution on the wall. But there is a slight financial gain for Mara here, because she's borrowing money from people saying that her inheritance is locked up. This is a kind of, you know, a classic play. And by 2019, she had conned him out of nearly $100,000.
Ooh, okay.
But he does what any producer in LA would do and turns it into a podcast.
Yes.
And he makes a very, very successful podcast about her called Queen of the Con, the Irish Heiress. And that was quite big over here. So a lot of people actually recognised Mara and her story. And this is where the Irish kind of connection becomes really, really strong. Because even though she wasn't the heiress that she was claiming to be, she had actually lived in Northern Ireland for a while. And while there, had done other cons. So she was working as a mortgage advisor from 2005 to 2009. And during that time, she'd fraudulently obtained large sums of money from customers for investments that she never made. In the initial instance, she was paying people out of her own pocket, saying that it was dividends. So it kind of kept them sweet for a while. Just a classic kind of scheme. But she had stopped, those payments had stopped, and she'd absconded back to the United States in May 2009. So there was a lot of victims left here that were waiting for answers. And the Public Prosecution Service had her extradited back here. So in February 2004, she was arrested and she was returned to Northern Ireland, where she did face charges. She, and amongst her other personas, though, that she had done when she was just kind of casually conning, she had posed as a psychic. She had posed as an alternative healer. She had said that she was a practitioner of black magic, which is very interesting. Whoa. And not one that I thought people would hand over their money for, but I don't really know what goes on. So she was convicted in September 2025. It took just 25 minutes to convict her of 3 counts of theft and 3 of fraud. And she was sentenced to 40 months imprisonment, having defrauded people out of over £115,000 when she was here. So plus the $100,000 she'd gotten off the producer man, she was doing quite well for monetary gain. Now, she was deported, or at least faces deportation back to the United States. So she won't be serving her time in Ireland.
Yeah.
She's gone.
She's gone. But she's gone. But if she's back there.
Well, the deportation order came in 2025. So I imagine she's gone now.
She's gone.
I don't know how long it takes to process a deportation order. I've never done it.
Yeah. I wonder, will he now go after her for the 100 grand, or does she face arrest?
I'd say he's made more than 100 grand off that podcast.
No doubt.
You know? Maybe he will. Maybe she will face, she can face charges over there. Why wouldn't she, I suppose?
Yeah. But her real name is Mare Smith.
Her real name is Mare Smith. It is a very Irish name for an American to
Isn't
have.
It just? Yeah. Yeah. Isn't it just? Right. And I suppose this is kind of, this is Leitrim, so it's kind of close enough to where Mare Smith used to operate. And this is bizarre. This is really method acting in terms of being a con person.
There was a lot of commitment here. Now, not as much as commitment as he says. So this is a really strange case. But again, at least at least there's a clear sort of reasoning for this. So we're in Leitrim in 2013, and on a remote road, a woman called Catherine Valley is driving home, and she comes across what she thinks is a bollard, but it's actually a man. He's so disheveled, disorientated, emaciated. He's about 30 kilos lighter than he should be. Beard grown down to his chest, fingernails that haven't been cut in months, and across his forehead in kind of permanent marker is the word thief written. So his name is Kevin McKeever, and he is a 68-year-old property developer. And his story that he starts to tell is absolutely harrowing, heartbreaking. He says he was abducted from his home in Galway 8 months previous, and that he'd been held captive and kept in a freezing steel shipping container, possibly underground, in total darkness. His kidnappers, he says, were Russian gangsters who owed him money. He owed money to over property deals in Dubai. So massive story overnight, totally international. We have a tycoon who's been kidnapped, held for months, who has somehow escaped or dumped on a road, and Gardaí launch a major investigation. But almost immediately there's holes in this story. So it doesn't quite hang together. His timeline is vague. There's a lot of wobbles, and they start digging into who Kevin McKeever really is. And the actual picture is quite dark. He was a man who'd been lying and cheating and conning people for years. So there's fake bank accounts in Liechtenstein, and a fake identity, a fake paradise in Dubai. So he had actually taken in, and this blows my mind, he had taken in 70 million euro in investment funds.
Whoa.
Like, where's the due diligence? You know, I can't even get a few hundred quid together. He'd handled more than these massive amounts of money over an apparent property in Dubai. Over 60 Irish investors had lost money. Mental.
Crikey.
Point me in the direction of those investors. Yeah. His flagship project.
Well, they don't have any money anymore.
They don't have any money left.
So what's the point? Yeah.
His 17-story tower was supposed to be a Dubai sports city, but it was actually just an empty shell. And there was, before he was supposedly kidnapped, an international arrest warrant out for him that had been issued by Dubai police through Interpol. And if you learned anything from Katie Price's husband, it's that you cannot leave Dubai when there is any sort of outstanding warrant for your arrest.
This is true. Yeah.
So he must have absconded. There was no Russian gangsters, obviously. Nobody kept him in a container for 8 months. He had just, you know, made up the entire thing.
Where had he been?
He had been off in the west of Ireland in a little cottage, probably sitting beside a fire, I imagine drinking a red wine, reading his books, having a nice time.
But he must have been growing the beard and not washing and losing weight.
So that was his commitment to it, and that he had made himself look horrendous and written thief across his forehead himself. He had starved himself, which was mad. But all of the harm he'd done, all of it was part of staging to what was a flawed story to begin with. So if he'd spent that 8 months really kind of hashing out the details, he maybe would have gotten away with it. His plan backfired for really the simplest reason. Like, when he was planning to be found on the road, he didn't want Gardaí to intervene. He didn't want to press charges or go any further with it. But obviously the guards got involved, and the person who found him wanted it to be pursued. So it was almost the kindness of the strangers who found him that was his unraveling. So full investigation goes into himself. False statements prompted a 6-week inquiry costing €86,000 and over 3,000 hours of Garda time. He made 8 separate statements claiming that he'd been kidnapped and he'd spent 16 days on remand in prison. So just a mad, sad story. And I suppose one of the saddest things about this was that he had a long-term partner who's actually dying of terminal cancer throughout all of this. And she passed away in 2013. He had lost, you know, he had lost his fortune during the crash, but again, dealt with it in just these mad ways.
Yeah. So what was his motivation in doing all this?
His motivation was that he had taken that investment money off investors and that the plan had fallen through, which obviously is very, very stressful. But look, there's a way out of everything. Hiding in a remote cottage in the west of Ireland pretending to be kidnapped is not the best way out of it. He could have approached it and been up front. But I think a lot of the issue was that maybe there was no real intention to fulfill that project to begin with, and that a lot of what he was doing was with the view of conning people. He wasn't the most upstanding gentleman to begin with.
Yeah. Well, so, obviously the Dubai authorities felt that was the case.
Yeah, when he's a very scary man.
Yeah, but it almost sounds like, I'll just do all this and everyone will feel sorry for me and then let me go.
That's exactly what he thought would happen. He thought that if his investors found out that he'd been kidnapped and that he wasn't allowed to cut his fingernails and that he lost weight, that they might feel sympathy for him and leave him off. That's not really how investment works anyway. I suppose they would have taken him in, washed him up, put him in one of those Patagonia jackets and sent him on his way to get their money back. And obviously this didn't win any favour with him. He was sentenced in April 2016 to a 2-year prison sentence suspended. And it was just suspended, I suppose, as part not to waste any more taxpayers' money on this guy. So he had spent 30 years building this elaborate kind of different elaborate schemes, and it came down, crashing down very, very quickly.
Yeah. Interesting it was suspended. But I suppose it was similar to the Azapardi woman, the first story. It was really the main offence was wasting Garda time.
Wasting time. It's hard to pinpoint where the actual crimes are here and whether, I suppose, it's beneficial to keep them in prison at the cost of the state or to set them off. Samantha Azapardi, I do think she could, you know, more needed to be done to keep her and to keep other people around her safe, because there's a lot of trauma in the events that have happened around her. I mean, McKeever, by the time he was caught, was 71. So,
yeah.
And he'd lost everything. Just send him back to the little cottage in the west.
My word. Those 3 fascinating stories. Cassie, thanks a million. As ever, Cassie Delaney there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.